The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 544, recorded on July 16th, 2019.
Welcome to the 544th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 377th episode of the Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Denzer.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Falcon.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback. No, there isn't.
I forgot. Last week, I also... Did I mention I finished Void Bastards?
You didn't mention that you finished it. You said that you were playing
Right. So here's the thing. The thing I forgot to talk about because I was too busy talking about Viva Pinata is that Void Bastards, you know, here's the problem. The game ends way too soon. And it doesn't end on a happy note for you. It's a downer ending, but it wasn't basically a downer ending. It's more like the game, it's sort of like, wait, that was it? You know, and it just kicked me to the ending and said, okay, that's it. Bye-bye. And that ruined the game for me. That really ruined the game for me. It was like, yeah, that's it. Goodbye.
Huh.
It's like, it felt like it could be a bigger game. It felt like there was so much more it could do. And I felt like I played the demo. It literally felt like I just finished the demo.
That's a shame. Like, it really did sound like the kind of thing where the way it was built for multiple playthroughs, but like...
It is built for multiple playthroughs, but the playthrough is so short. And here's the thing, it was a roguelike, and, you know, you don't expect roguelikes to be short.
Right.
So, yeah. I mean, here's the thing. I say go play it, but just be prepared to, when the game ends, says, wait, what? That's it?
That was my experience with, Plague Tale as well. It was moving along. It had a lot of things going on. And then it just kind of like it wraps up, but it wraps up in a weird way that's just like completely unsatisfying.
Yeah. I think I should go back to Super Hot and complete that. I don't know. I think Void Bastards made me want to play Super Hot again.
That's a real shame because that did sound fun.
It is fun. That's why I was like, what? What? Stop. It's over, and that's what happens to you? Really? Sort of. It's almost a slap in the face. It's almost like slapping you in the face for playing it. Especially the tone of the game. The tone of the game is extremely snarky, and you can deal with the snark, but when the game just snarks at you and ends, you know, it's sort of like, yeah, fuck you, game over. It's like, what? What? I'm glad I didn't pay anything for it. I mean, well, it's a Game Pass, so I did pay something for it, but I didn't actually pay specifically for it.
What were you going to say, Scott?
I was going to say it's a shame that a game could be so short and over. I've only had a few of those experiences back in the NES days where I played, I think it was called Guerrilla Warfare, and I beat it within an hour, and I couldn't believe it was that quick.
Well, it isn't that it's short. It's that you're really invested in it, and you're really enjoying it, and you're really building a strategy. Like, okay, because the game often tells you what enemies are on a grid, on a thing, what some of the hazards are. So it's sort of like, you know, you're given a vast array of weaponry to use. And I think I didn't build two of them. That's how fast it ended. And it's sort of like, well, you know, so there's going to be the tourists who explode when you shoot them. And, you know, or like vizzes, which, you know. They can only – so it tells me, okay, well, I have to bring the toxic cloud thing, which will not only kill them slowly, you know, because – but the radiation cloud is the only thing that affects the vizzes, and they can also – they also don't reveal your position and this and that, you know. So I should also bring – since that's the only physical enemy, I also should bring the pistol and the electric thing as your utility because that freezes – mechanical equipment, so if I come upon any turrets, I can just freeze them and either turn them to my side or just destroy them. You know, so it's sort of, there's a lot of planning that goes on before you go in each level, right? And then it's sort of like, okay, that's it. It's like, wait, what? Because the game is deep, yet the gameplay, you know, the gameplay is short. I mean, it's one thing if it's shallow and it's short, you know, sort of like something like Serious Sam. But when it has a lot of strategy and it just ends, it's like, wait, I wanted to flex more of my strategic muscle here. You know, I could play on a harder mode, but I don't think I'll be doing that. Because why bother? Because I know how it ends. And, you know, it's like, oh, okay.
Yeah. Those games often, like, I think my first thought immediately whenever I play a game like that, after which, like I said, Plague Tale immediately comes to mind. It makes me think of, in the moment, like, what happened? Did they just run out of money? Did the director come in and say, okay, we have to ship this today. Let's write an ending.
But that's the frustrating thing. With Void Bastards, they didn't need to, you know, it would have taken more. Just have you have to build more items, you know, with different things, you know? That's all you needed to do was just, extend the gameplay. Like, okay, you finished that. Well, now you have to build this. You know, the crafting never changes. And you can reuse different item, what's it called? Different crafting items to build new items, you know? It was so easy for them to make the game even longer and just have the enemies get harder and harder. So it was like, it wasn't that they ran out of money and it couldn't have been play balance. It's just almost like a dick move. Like, yeah, whatever. The game's over. Fuck you. Because if you play Void Bastards, you can see where it could keep on going on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could easily see it, you know, and the thing is that, you know, it is a very strategic game. It is probably one of the most strategic. It's a stealth game, and it really does hold up to being a stealth game, you know. Because if you get caught by the security cameras, they send out robots that'll just wipe the mat with you, right? And I had recently got the ability. Well, I can hack the robot now, you know. So it's sort of like, yeah, the robots come after me. I just stun it, then quickly hack it if I have enough merits. You know, it's an extremely strategic game. I can't say don't play Void Bastards, just that you will be pissed off when it ends, because it just shuts the door on you and says, okay, that's it. It seems so arbitrary.
That's disappointing. Like, when I saw that it was done by the creative director behind System Shock, I really, like, from the way you described it, it does sound very fun. And I think that I would want to play it, at least for the experience of playing it. But that's a real shame about the ending.
It's worse than the original ending to Mass Effect 3. I mean, where you just picked one button to press. Or Deus Ex Human Revolution, for that matter. But this, it's like, yeah, we're going to give you a really deep game with a ton of strategy that you don't see in most shooters. You know, it isn't even that it's stealth, it's strategy. And, you know, it has a wicked sense of humor and, you know, and if you die, that's fine. You know, just recycle a new character with new stats and stuff like that immediately. It just gets you back in the game, you know, and then it just says, okay, it's over, goodbye. It's just, like I said, I heard someone say that, oh, God, I'm not going to play Void Bastards again. And you know how when you hear something like that, you say, well, whatever. It's someone's opinion. You know, I'm enjoying this. And then you get, and then you say, oh, that's why. Okay, I get it. So, anyways, I've been playing Railroad Empire on the Xbox One X, which is, it's a strange game to play on console. I only got through a little bit of the tutorial or the first campaign. I don't know what to say. It seems okay. So, you know, what have you been playing, Scott?
I have been playing Dragon's Quest Builders 2.
Oh,
and
okay.
Yeah, that just came out July 12th, in fact. I had pre-ordered it. I wanted some of the little things you can build. That's the pixelated hero and the pixelated title, Dragon's Quest title. But basically, this is... this takes place sometime after the original Dragon's Quest II, and it seems like it's almost like sequel material, since apparently Dragon's Quest II was actually the end of chronologically of the first trilogy of the first three games of the series. And in it, you are a builder, and you're on this ship, and you're being taken somewhere, and supposedly going to be executed at some point. And it's a tutorial mode to introducing you to the game, how it works.
Oh yeah, I played that. I played that at PAX East, that part in which you're on the ship and you have to find all the stuff.
Yes. And then the at some point the ship hits a storm, it breaks up, and you're drowning, and this guy rescues you, or at least a hand pulls you out of the ocean, and it appears to be Malroth, who is this. I guess you find out pretty quickly he's this Lord of Destruction, but he has amnesia and doesn't remember it. And there's these voices in his head talking to him.
Yeah, and this, when I was playing on the ship, it seemed like this game had a really weird sense of humor.
Yeah, it's definitely an odd sense of humor. But I do like it. I think it's changed some of the things from the first game. You don't have the durability mechanic on your tools, so once you build a tool, you have it. You can, let's see, I'm trying to think of all the things that were different, because I felt like there was a lot of different things, like some of the UI was improved. Malroth accompanies you as you go around collecting adventures and going on quests, so he'll help you attack stuff or destroy stuff, so it's kind of like your multiplayer. You have a little NPC buddy. And yeah, you find a ruined town and you build it up, but this time they integrated it more. Instead of having chapters, you go on a ship to various islands, and then you can load that island up and play in it, or go back to the main island, the Island of Awakening, which seems to be your new creative world area where you could just build and upgrade whatever you want. Once you're back from one of the main island, adventure islands, where you unlock your stuff, and it transfers between both places. Whatever you unlock stays unlocked. It's a fun game. I'm having fun with it, and I want to see where the story goes.
So one other thing is Microsoft unveiled just what the new Minecraft game is going to be like, Minecraft Worlds.
Yes.
And you saw that video too.
Yeah.
It's interesting what they're doing with it.
It was interesting. They were messing around with the house. They were going around collecting stuff. You just seem to get, like, random blocks or random things, and you can collect them. You click on them.
Well, there's several modes. I mean, one, you obviously have the outdoor mode in which you can collect stuff. But two, you have the tabletop mode in which basically everything you're working on is on the tabletop now. Mm-hmm. You just work at it. And then the interesting mode is that you have the live mode in which if you have a house – you go inside the house.
Yeah, that is cool. That's definitely cool to have a first-person view, and you're like shaky cam, though, a little bit, because I guess, you're using your hands. And you can go in there and then dig out the blocks or break them, burn them, whatever, build.
You still have the night mode, too. And what's creepy is that the creatures that attack you, if you watch it, I was noticing they were crawling all over the office furniture on the sofa and all that stuff. So not only do you have the creatures attacking you at night, they actually, if you're playing it at home, they'll be crawling all over your furniture to get at you.
That is impressive and very interesting.
So, yeah. And it's also free to play, so I can't imagine that you won't try it out.
Yeah, it'll be fun to try. Be able to play with my wife and daughter, that'd be fun.
Oh, yeah, also, when you're playing with someone else, when you look at the virtual, you can see what they're doing, because it'll show a little pickaxe in front of them.
Or a sword, or bow, whatever they're holding in their hand.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was funny on the video. They were, Mumbo started.
They were shooting the poor pirates!
Well, Grian was shooting them, and Mumbo was lighting stuff on fire, and then
he went inside the house in live mode and just set the house on fire.
Yeah.
He looked up and he saw the fire burning on the roof and all that stuff.
Oh, man. They just wanted to see what they could do.
Yeah. They could be pricks. And earlier in the video, they showed something that, that Microsoft said you could do, but they were doing it on their own, in which they were building something in Hyde Park. And,
Yeah.
And when you do that, people can come upon it and, you know, see what you built there, you know, virtually.
That is cool.
You didn't see it, did you, TJ?
What is it?
The new Minecraft game, Minecraft Earth. Demo.
I've heard of this, but I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Okay, it was just I said you can look at the link in the Skype thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean it's really impressive what they're doing, and Microsoft is taking what Pokemon Go did and said, "Hold my beer."
Yeah,
that's pretty neat.
A lot of the things that when you play Pokemon Go, I know a lot of people are frustrated and say, why can't I? I would love to be able to, you know, and all this stuff that they wish Pokemon Go could do. Apparently, Microsoft and Mojang were listening and said, you know what? We can do that. Especially since the HoloLens never really took off. You know, I think they figured out, you know what? They saw what Pokemon Go is doing and said, you know, we don't need this expensive hardware. We'll just make it so that people can just do this from their cell phones or their tablets. Because they all have cameras on them now.
Yeah. I will say I have been playing a little bit of Dragon Quest Builders 2 as well. That's not what I was going to talk about. But I do want to mention one of my favorite things about that game so far as any builder farming sim that I've ever played is how much it respects your time. There's a lot of good features in that game that they didn't have in the first one that makes it a lot more streamlined. Like – you can literally fast travel whenever you feel like it. There are little hubs in the world that, like, as soon as you feel like it, you just hit the you literally just hit the pause button, hit the place you want to go to, and you're there, like, in seconds. And that's, like, super respectful to my time, for one thing. Mm-hmm. And then, like, they did stuff, like, to remove tedium that you can unlock along the way. Like, you get like a town of villagers after a certain point, and if you level up the town, then they'll take over certain like tedious tasks that are usually you'd have to do yourself, like
mining and chopping down trees
and cooking and farming.
Yeah,
I don't know if farming was in the first game. I can't remember if it was.
You had to do a lot of it yourself. This one, like, they'll till the land for you, and if you level it up, you can assign a crop to a field, and they'll plant the seeds for you once the crops are harvested, which is just like, thank you for saving me time to do other stuff that I care about.
Right.
Playing on PS4 or?
It's PS4, Switch. We're playing it on the Switch.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Cool. But as for what I have been playing Dragon Quest Builders too, but as for what else I've been playing this one that just came out recently, and I've talked about it on here before, I do believe. It's called Eagle Island. And
I don't think you have talked on about it here.
Oh, okay. Well, if I haven't, it's caught my attention this year. It's like the latest in the saga of pixelated bird themed platformers that I love.
Well, not How to Fool Boyfriend, is it?
No. This reminds me of Owlboy in a lot of ways, except it's like really, really hard. Basically, the premise.
Okay.
Yeah, the premise behind it is it's you get trapped on this deserted island, and you have an owl that follows you around, and you get your hands on a falconer glove, and you can use it to basically throw the owl at enemies and do attacks.
Well, first you should mention it's retro. It's like a 16-bit game.
Yes.
It seems to be like a Metroidvania, too.
Yes. It is different in that once you enter a level, the level changes based on, like, it has a certain amount of randomization. So, like, it has so many different rooms and instances that it can come up with. And so every time you enter a level, it's going to be a different layout of, like, Metroidvania-style room crawling and monster defeating. And it's interesting in that way because you can not only just like leave it to be entirely random each time, but you can also input a series of numbers. It has a seed system where you can put in six numbers and it'll set the levels according to that seed. I thought it was super cool. Like it's got a combo system where if you hit an enemy and then hit another enemy with like consecutive attacks, you build up a combo meter and you like can collect items that allow you to cast magic spells or like get an item that will restore your life. And so there's a lot to it. Like it's difficult. It's not easy at all, but it's fun.
Two things. One, there's a demo on Steam.
Mm-hmm.
So the other thing is that there are almost no reviews on Steam. There's only 18 reviews, which shocks me. You know, it seems like the sort of game which have like 200 reviews. Yeah, but not a lot of people are talking about it.
This literally came out like maybe 2 or 3 days ago.
It was on the 11th. Yeah.
Yeah. So it hasn't had much time out there. I hope people check it out. It's really fun. And the people.
Here's the thing. Even for this sort of game, you know, you have people. This is the sort of game that's catnip to a lot of gamers, and it's just – it's like you'll see stuff that has like 500 reviews, 1,000 reviews 2 weeks before its release, and this just has 18 after release. It's just – I don't know. It's just strange to me that it hasn't been getting the attention.
Yeah, it definitely deserves the attention. I played it at PAX West, and I've played it now that it's come out, and it's always been a fun time. And like I can imagine that this would be an awesome like games done quick type game, just like going in there and seeing what the game gives you and trying to conquer like a random dungeon.
Like I said, there's a demo, so if you're out there and you want to try Eagle Island, just go to Steam, get the demo, see if you like it. Mm-hmm. It's $20. So, anyways, we're going to move on to the news. First news item. An ambitious GTA Online-like. GTA Online-like. That sounds weird coming off.
Yeah.
An ambitious GTA Online clone won't be allowed to finish its Kickstarter campaign. This comes to us from PC Gamer. Now, by the way, this was news earlier in the day, but it wasn't really revealed what happened until later. So this is today's news, but the specific causes are actually breaking news. So like 3 hours ago, Kickstarter suspended the crowdfunding campaign for an extremely ambitious GTA Online-like MMO role-playing game called Raw, which hit its funding goal 2 weeks ago. The problem was that developers were only asking for $79,000. For comparison, GTA 5's development costs have been estimated at $137 million. According to Kickstarter's representative, our rules and guidelines ask that creators seek to raise the amount of money needed to bring a project to completion and fulfill all rewards. This creator started an update that said they would need to raise additional funds outside of Kickstarter to complete the game. We require projects to be honest and clearly presented, and this project failed to meet that standard. So basically what they're saying is that in an update they said, yeah, we're going to have to raise more money for this. And that was basically the developer's big mistake. They actually said it out loud. Because as we all know, people have been doing that forever from Kickstarter. We need only go back to Tim Schafer and you know, Double Fine actually selling having a Steam Early Access so they could pay for that, you know, their adventure game, Broken Age. And there was a controversy about that. So yeah, the problem with these guys, they actually admitted it.
I think they should have done better planning then.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing. $79,000 for an online multiplayer game, even if it isn't something as ambitious. So here, the thing is that the website lists the main features, just the main ones, mind you, as 400 square kilometers of playable area, viable land and real estate, an advanced government system which can become mayor, according to the trailer, a contract system for doing things like hauling goods, and a lot more. So $79,000? Really?
Yeah, it's not going to be enough.
Now, they say they're going to seek funding again through Indiegogo. I hope they up that, because they said that they would need to raise $300,000. That's not going to be enough, fellas. For this game, no. Not $300,000. This is a game that's going to require minimum something like $2 million. Or else it's never going to get completed. And if it does get completed, it'll be a shadow of what's promising. This kind of game is not easy. MMOs in general, even if this isn't one of the... See, it's a good idea because one of the things about MMOs is that content, you know, and they have to worry about endgame content. Some MMOs got away from that, like Dark Age of Camelot, because the endgame content was basically created by the players because they had realm versus realm versus realm, right? So that's basically what this is doing. Just give the players a plop of land, stuff to do in it, and then stand back and say, okay, you're on your own, fellas.
Yeah, they should have gone the Shenmue 3 route, which was just basically trickling a little bit more money in, a little bit more money in, a little bit more money in, and then just like not making it like an obscenely new thing, but like just being like, oh, you know, we're getting to it. We're going to be there. We're going to get there. In the meantime, we just need a little bit more money.
Yeah, that's called the Star Citizen route, actually. Because here's the thing, Kickstarter. You had fucking Star Citizen on your service. That started out with, on your site, I think it was $12 million. And through independent raising, which according to you is against your rules, they raised, I think, what was it, $300 million? Let me check this. Star Citizen funding, because I know it just got insane. How much has it raised? They have unlimited stretch goals to those people. Funding stats. Let's check the funding stats. So anyways, Scott?
Yes?
Feel free to comment while I'm loading this stuff.
On the, like we were saying, bad planning, but it does seem short-sighted, like they don't really know what they're doing. I mean, it's like you said, it could be lots of money, and how have they not planned this out better? And I don't know.
Star Citizen, by the way, raised $230 million with 2.3 million donors. Which means the average citizen donated $100 to it.
Is that game coming out?
It's the alpha, if I remember correctly. I mean, people are playing the alpha. But it's like, I don't think anybody cares anymore about Star Citizen. I mean, when the single-player campaign comes out, I'll be interested. But then again, I didn't invest any money in it. I'm just going to buy it like a regular person, provided it comes out.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spend $10,000 for a ship.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Who do you think you are, Star Citizen? EVE Online?
Well, EVE Online is just for suckers.
So a Star Citizen.
See, here's the thing. Here's the thing. When you have your ship in Star Citizen, you get to keep it. EVE Online, there's a danger you're going to be attacked, destroyed, and left penniless. And not even in game currency. No, in real life currency. At least Star Citizen isn't going to do that for you. The best thing about Star Citizen is that at least it gave me a lot of music that I like to listen to. And a lot of commercials. Here's the thing sometimes I like to do. I like to string along the Star Citizen commercials because there are in-game commercials from these fictional companies talking about their ships. And these commercials are great. So when I have them on, it makes me feel like I'm in the far future and it's like 2 a.m. in the morning. And these are the droning commercials that you'll have in the future about spaceships that you can purchase that are really cheesy ad sales like you would have for a ShamWow now. It makes me feel like I'm living in the future. Seriously. You should try it. Just have it on in the background with Lance Henriksen as the doing all these commercial voiceover work. So, getting back to this, yeah. Here's the thing. If I was going to donate to them, I'm not going to now because they clearly don't know what they're doing. I mean, remember that Phoenix game? That isn't going to be out until 2020 now. We talked about it, Scott.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that one? Yeah, the game's going to come out in 2020. What?
Yeah, that was a shame.
Yeah.
I'll never forget the Kickstarter. I wonder how many Kickstarters would be shut down if this whole ruling was applied across the board.
But here's the thing. Just don't talk about it. You know, here's the thing. I actually, and I shouldn't have, I backed 3 board games on Kickstarter. But here's the thing. I already know I'm going to get them. I know I'm not going to be ripped off.
Yeah, you got to be careful with a lot of these Kickstarters. If they're
video game Kickstarters are iffy.
Yeah.
Board game Kickstarters, they already have it ready. They're just asking you for the production costs.
Right. I mean, when you see the stuff where they like have the board game design shown and they have the miniatures shown, I mean, like that's kind of a no-brainer to a certain degree. If you like it, do it. If you don't, don't.
And a lot of them, when you back it, they give you the option to have the print in play, so you can actually play it before they actually send it to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know. And most of the funding just comes to get better material. You know. Like, I backed the game that's done by the Cyanide and Happiness guys called Trolley. Trolley Tracker. It's a very simple game. You have a trolley, and there are two branches. And then you put people on each branch, and you have two teams, and they each have to vote to the one person who's manning the trolley which one to kill. Like, on one side of the track, you'll have your mom, a kitten sleeping with a puppy, and a pedophile near a kindergarten playground. Or, on the other hand, you have a balloon filled with airborne Ebola, Santa Claus, and a woman who's about to cure cancer. Which one are you going to kill? Which group are you going to kill? So that's basically the game. And there are modifiers, too. One of the funny things I saw was a modifier to your mom. And the modifier was, if she dies, she'll become more powerful than you can possibly imagine. So I think they've done funding for that one. But, of course, it's going to be available in stores. And that's the other thing, you know. A lot of these games are going to be available in stores. I mean, I also backed Role Player only because I felt I had to, because it was the expansion. It was the second expansion, and it came with a big box. You could put all the expansions inside it. I spent a lot of money I shouldn't have. Thank goodness my birthday's in 2 weeks. Hopefully I'll get that money back. So that's that. Anyways, are we done with this? Are we done with these fools?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Scott.
Okay. Tetris Effect headed to PC next week via Epic Games Store. This is from Eurogamer. Tetris Effect will arrive on PC next week via the Epic Games Store. It'll be the first time it has been available anywhere other than PlayStation 4. As on PS4, Tetris Effect is also designed for VR and will arrive both with Oculus Rift and HTC Vive support ready to go. This PC version will also offer extra graphical options, resolution 4K, and are supported with an uncapped frame rate, ultra-wide monitor support, and more. Put down a pre-order before launch or buy Tetris Effect within its first 2 weeks, and you'll get 20% off a sampler, soundtrack, and desktop wallpapers.
So you've been awesome. Playing this on the PS4, right, TJ?
Yeah, a little bit. I like it. I like it a lot. It's a really fun game.
I like that they have a soundtrack and desktop wallpaper. I think of four games should have desktop wallpapers.
Yep.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
But have you played it in VR is the question.
Yes, I have my PSVR.
I haven't.
And really, I like that way. I really enjoy playing it that way. And
for those who don't know, this Tetris Effect was designed by the same guy who did Luminous, and it shows.
Yes. It's a very, very, very pretty game. And
also musically synced, just like Luminous.
And if you have access to VR capabilities, I would absolutely suggest giving it a go in that, because it's one of the most enjoyable experiences to play in VR.
So what this tells me is, like, in 3 or 6 months, the Xbox One and the Switch are going to be getting it, because it's not a first party game, it's a third party game, and we all know how exclusivity goes now. I think Microsoft doesn't care, because guess what? They're claiming the PC for themselves right now. They're saying no, PC is our beast. We own Microsoft Windows, and who gives a shit about Linux? I know you do, Scott. I know you do, TJ. I know you like Linux a lot.
I do like having competition. It's a good for the economy.
Who gives a shit about Apple OS?
Oh man.
Who fucking plays on a Mac? All they do is compose music on it and do video editing.
The VR Tetris does sound really cool. I like that as a different concept to the game.
Have you seen it played, TJ, Scott?
I have not.
Have you ever played Luminous?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's basically what Tetris is, because the music is synced up to the thing. So you know, when a block lands, it'll do a musical hit that's in tune with the rest of the music, and then when you move things, so what happens is that basically it's playing Tetris but with Luminous but with Tetris rules. And, you know, you also have the same visual effects, you know, that, like, the blocks turn different colors and stuff like that. So basically you're playing Tetris Luminous.
Oh, that sounds cool.
Yep. The game also will distract the hell out of you, because while you're playing Tetris, it'll fly all these other graphics and background and all that stuff, and it always feels to me like it's trying to get you to screw up by distracting you from the Tetris board. I mean, do you find yourself distracted, TJ, when you're playing it?
No, I'm always, like, there's difficulties to it, but I always kind of play it a little, I play that game to relax, so it's just kind of, I put it on casual, and I just...
Oh, I was about to ask, is there a Zen mode?
I think TJ has been used to playing fighting games which have distracting backgrounds, so he's just used to zoning out of all that.
See, here's the thing. Even me playing fighting games, I've never been distracted by the background.
I'm more distracted by everything moving on the screen at lightning speed all at once and trying to make sure that I have the right timing to get it down. Yeah. So Tetris, I just throw that. That's something I go to just, like, chill. And I throw it on casual, and I just have myself a little experience.
I guess I found the Street Fighter 2 backgrounds more distracting because it always had people there just cheering or doing whatever. And sometimes the background is just beautiful to look at.
Yeah, that's the problem with Tetris Effect, that it is aggressively beautiful, and sometimes it actually obscures the action.
But maybe that is part of the plan, the gameplay, to make it difficult.
Yeah.
I guess we also have to mention that, before we bury the lead, that this is also an Epic Store, Game Store exclusive.
I will say this. Tetris Effect is a little different from most Tetris games because most Tetris games are very stressful once you get to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. Tetris Effect is still Tetris in its core, but it's also just kind of an experience that happens to be formatted like Tetris. I won't say that it's still Tetris and you can still make it difficult, but like... For me, it's more about like the aural and visual, just like experience.
Well, it's like Rez. I mean, people play Rez. What was the other game that he made that was a spiritual successor to Rez that used the Kinect?
I know what you're talking about, but I'm trying to remember what it was.
Yeah, but his games are always, you know.
Amplitude? Was it Amplitude?
No, it wasn't Amplitude. It was a different game. But it's just like his games are designed to make you zone out.
Oh, well, he also has Child of Eden and Space
Child Channel. Of Eden was the game that was a Kinect game. Yeah, it was Child of Eden. High Res Studios. Yeah, Child of Eden was the Kinect game. Mm-hmm. Although you know the other thing that Res was used for, because remember, it made use of the vibrating controllers. So people put that to good use.
Oh, my God.
It's true. I do not lie. Look it up.
I don't want to. I don't want to know.
The game was very popular with women. I'll tell you that much. And a lot of men, too. Yeah. Look up Rez and Vibration.
Goodness gracious.
Vibrator. Yeah.
This podcast just went from PG-13 to R.
Yeah.
Yeah, but no, since I have a press account on Epic Games, at least I'll get it for free.
Yeah, I implore you, give it a go if you haven't yet. It's really fun.
You know, here's the thing. I'm sort of burned out on Tetris. I mean, I played it since its inception, and you know, maybe it'll be different. You know, some sites actually gave it its Game of the Year.
Wow.
Yeah, like I said, it's Tetris, but really kind of just only in the way that it's formatted in the name. It's not really like stressful block dropping, like prove yourself, see how far you can go type Tetris. It really is sort of a more relaxing experience.
You know, Tetsuya Mizuguchi also did Space Channel 5.
Yes, he did.
So that I gotta play again. There's just something about Space Channel 5 that's just so campy and innocent at the same time. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next news item. Go ahead, TJ.
Joy-Con Drift is becoming a real problem on the Switch.
You know, by the way, before you move on, doesn't Joy-Con Drift sound like a racing game?
It does. I actually thought we were about to be talking about a game. It is a problem. From Kotaku, by the way, for months, Nintendo Switch users have been plagued by what's becoming known as Joy-Con drift. Although they're not touching the joystick on their Nintendo Switch controller, the console still thinks it's moving. With no permanent fix being offered by Nintendo, they're just sick of it. 2 days ago, a thread on the Nintendo Switch subreddit about the issue was upvoted over 25,000 times. One player had started getting issues with drift on their Joy-Con after only 4 months of use. Quote, "And before someone says contact Nintendo and have them repair it," they wrote, "I shouldn't have to spend $4 in 2 weeks without my Joy-Cons for them to just come back again and break again in 4 months. And before someone says, then buy a do-it-yourself repair kit for $1, again, there's absolutely no reason for me to do that on a luxury controller." Well, that's going a bit far, I think. But they continued, "And yes, I consider an $80 a luxury controller because my PS4's DualShock 4 hasn't drifted for years for me, and my Pro controller, which has all my extensive rough play time on it, is also perfectly fine." He also linked to examples of other people having the same problem, like a person who tweeted a video at Nintendo of America. When you search for Joy-Con drift on Twitter, you get dozens of users complaining that their controllers are effectively broken and asking Nintendo when it thinks this issue will be fixed. It's similar to the Switch subreddit, where threads about the issue and some possible fixes have been highly upvoted, even as far back as 11 months ago. Fans have taken their controllers apart to try and diagnose the issue. Kotaku reached out to Nintendo for comment, but did not hear back in time for publication. Fans have not found a permanent fix on the issue beyond simply tearing out the joystick in the controller and replacing it with another.
God, if you're replacing the joystick itself,
that's a mechanical issue.
Contact issue.
Yeah, that's a mechanical issue, not a software or hardware issue.
I guess they're expecting Nintendo to just ship out new Joy-Cons to people or something,
with the red light issue, Microsoft did the sent out Xbox 360s for free, and they paid for shipping. You know, and the shipping wasn't cheap; it was like $40, and it was like they spent approximately $1 billion with that issue with the Xbox 360.
I have had colleagues that had this issue. Like, I only recently started hearing about it a little bit more frequently, though not as widespread as this article is making it out to be. I don't know if it's just like. It's hard to make an assessment beyond the fact that it sounds like people are mistreating what is essentially a very small and fragile controller.
Here's the thing. If this is a surge from purchases like 4 months ago, it could be that there's a faulty shipment, you know, major shipment of controllers.
What's not in this story, TJ, is this person was playing Fire Emblem.
The person who article is talking about it, but I excised that out because it was sort of like first person stuff. So.
They weren't playing on their controller roughly, or at least that's what they indicated, that they treated their controllers nice. But, you know, again, I remember people throwing their Wiimotes at TV, so I don't know.
Yeah,
I didn't do that because I knew not to. I hope this problem doesn't happen on the Switch Lite, because then your whole console is screwed.
Right. You can't swap that out. You'd have to buy a whole new system.
You know what I would like is if Nintendo just shipped the Switch with Pro controllers instead.
That would be awesome.
They're not going to do that.
I know, because you can't snap Pro controllers in half and have one person hold one and the other.
I was going to say more along the lines of Nintendo likes making money.
Yes.
But
actually, I've been looking at Pro controllers online, and there seems to be a whole bunch of unofficial Pro controllers that have the Switch logo on it. So
I would get the GameStop
parties to make.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's confusing because
I don't imagine it's very hard to make a Pro controller.
No, I don't think it is hard, but it just seems weird that I can't figure out what is an official Switch one versus a third-party one. But they all seem to be.
The lesson is that the Joy-Con sucks, and get yourself a Pro Controller as soon as possible, even if it's a third-party $20 one. Just don't use your Joy-Cons. Just if you really need them for when you're on the road.
I mean, the point of the story to me is, again, don't treat your equipment like shit.
But how do you know they're treating it like shit? I mean, people had bending iPods, iPhones when they were treating them nice, you know. And here's the thing: a controller is something by default that you're not going to be able to just put in a glass case and never touch.
Right.
At some point, you're going to have to use it.
But, like, there are plenty of people out there that aren't having this issue. I'm not having this issue. I'm not having this issue, and I have my Nintendo Switch since day one. And again,
that means you got lucky. I mean, there are people who had a launch 360 that never red-ringed.
But did I get lucky? Did I? I don't know if I did.
Well, considering all the mechanical issues people had with the launch Switch, yes, you did get lucky.
But some of the issues that people had with the launch Switch were like the screen gets scratched easily, and now we're at the joysticks aren't working right, and I'm like, I don't have.
But $25,000, come on, it's not people who are mistreating their controllers. Something's going on here.
I don't know. Like I said, Nintendo did give out free little rubber grips and little straps for their Wii.
Yeah, but here's but if it's a faulty batch, then nothing you can do.
That wasn't even a faulty batch. That was just people throwing their controllers that they shouldn't be doing.
Joy-Con controllers. I'm talking about, it isn't like people are hurling their Joy-Con controllers into the TV. No, I mean with this, there could be a faulty batch.
There could be. I don't know. And I think Nintendo should be replaced. Well, they say they are replacing. $4 is not a big deal to me to get them.
Yeah, but then you don't have your controller for 2 weeks.
Well, like you said, use the Pro controller.
But if you don't have a Joy, what if you're not?
I went and bought one. I don't know what else to tell you. You bought a Switch. You bought a very expensive console. You should be willing to spend money. Yeah, exactly.
That's elitist. That's kind of
well, more along the lines of you don't have the extra $4.
I just
like I said, if you spend the $4, then you're not playing for 2 weeks if you didn't get a Pro controller.
Being a gamer. It's not a cheap hobby. I'm sorry,
tell
it's just
that
not.
To a 10-year-old.
Yeah, I was 10 at one point. I know that pain. I remember when I was a kid, you get one game for 1 year or a month or whatever, you know.
Oh, by the way, here's something that might be, because I was wondering about this. Nintendo's moving production out of China, so it makes me wonder. If it's the new people who are making these controllers that's screwing up.
Maybe.
That could be too, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, to me, given the whole scratch on the screen fiasco.
Well, it wasn't even a scratch on the screen. It was like more like things were getting bent and all that stuff. I mean, there was a bunch of problems with the Switch, and Nintendo realized this, and the next batch were fine, so. You know, I mean, Nintendo built the first Switch on the cheap.
Right. And if you didn't throw it around or mistreat it, it was
fine.
But
people were mistreating it.
Oh, yeah, they were. I guarantee you.
My daughter was mistreating it. She, you know, that little adapter? She shoved the Joy-Cons into them at an angle. And
some people actually did that, and they were adults.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like.
But, I mean, not all of it. I mean, there are some people who just, you know, treated their Switch as well, and they still broke down.
Right.
I mean, my first 360 broke down, like, a month after, and it wasn't my fault, you know. Oh, God, I remember the my 3 out of every 4 Commodore 64s were faulty. 80% of the first iPods were faulty. I remember that.
Right. I mean,
so, I don't know.
The fact of the matter is, like, when stories like this come up, and especially, like, given the fact that there are plenty of people out there that aren't having this issue, and I just think to myself, well, why? And bad luck, they got lucky? Bad luck is a factor, but also, if you don't treat your stuff like shit, then you won't have as many problems.
Oh, I've treated my stuff like gold, and they've had problems before.
Sure, but that's bad luck. I'm saying that if you don't treat your stuff like shit, you're less likely to have bad luck.
Or bad manufacturing. I don't know. It just... Here's the thing. The Switch came out, what, 2 years ago? And suddenly this problem has become prevalent. It tells me that there's a manufacturing problem somewhere, because people who had their old Switches apparently didn't have this problem. I don't know if people, you know... Of all the problems the Switch had in its launch, the only complaints about the Joy-Con controllers were that there were baby controllers that weren't really good, even when they were working properly. There was never complaints that were there complaints about the Switch, you know, having this? Because I've had this happen to my 360 controllers. And usually that just meant I had to open it and move a thing, you know, something got misaligned in it.
Right.
But if you have to swap out the joystick itself, that tells me there's a bad contact.
And I don't know if like that people haven't agreed on a permanent fix for this. So obviously that's not an end all be all answer. That's not like clearly that's working for some people, but not others.
So anyways, Joy-Cons suck. Just get a Pro Controller. Only use the Joy-Con if you really, really, really have to.
Or just take care of your equipment.
Oh, wait a minute. But you do have to use the Joy-Con controllers when you're using the screen, don't you?
Yes. And portable mode, you have to use the... Well, no, you can hook up a Pro Controller in portable mode, too.
Yeah, that's kind of awkward, though. Basically, the entire point of having the screen is that you can hold up the screen with the controls on either side.
The original Switch has a little kickstand where you can put it back and play it with a Pro Controller.
Oh, you're going to put a Switch on your lap on the train? Oh, come on. Get real. Let's...
No, just like on a flat surface.
Yeah, well, on a train? On a bus?
Well, then you bust out the Joy-Cons, Jonah.
That's what I meant. You have to use the Joy-Cons if you really want to play it. If you're walking around, you're going to have a... How's that going to help you?
Yes, if there's no flat surface within 25 miles of you, you have to use the Joy-Cons.
Yeah, but what if you're just walking? That's the point. Because you know, I've seen people walking around playing the Switch while they're walking. You know?
Sure.
You need the Joy-Con controls for that.
Yes, you do.
You know what I'd like to see is if someone made an Elite Joy-Con.
Yeah.
Third party.
That would be nice.
Because it's just the size of it and where the thing's going to hook up to your Switch.
That's half the reason I haven't bought a Pro Controller, because I find it odd that you can't just pop that thing in half and put it on either side. Like That seems
kind of awkward, wouldn't it?
Nah, I mean, like if you can, I mean, they already have the setup for the Joy-Cons where you can slide it into a little pad and it's ready to go as like a normal controller. So yeah, I don't.
But then it looks weird. I mean, the Pro Controller has flanges and all that stuff. I mean, when you're using the Joy-Cons, at least it looks like it's part of the entire screen. You know, there's no. It's like the screen has controls. You know.
Right, but I'm talking functionality. I don't really
understand. I know functionality. It's going to look terrible.
Functionality doesn't matter about style. We're talking. You're talking style. I'm talking functionality.
Well, look at the Elite controller. The Xbox Elite controller. I mean, why don't they make a Joy-Con version of that? You know, just have like an $80 Joy-Cons, you know?
No, see, that's what I'm saying, is that I don't understand why they don't make a Pro Controller that you can just literally slide in half and then put each side on either side of the Switch.
I mean, a Joy-Con version of, you know, the Elite version of the Joy-Cons, not the Pro.
I think we're arguing towards the exact same thing.
Yeah, but I'm talking about the shape. I mean, the Pro Controller is already the Elite version of the Joy-Con, basically.
Right.
That's why it's called a Pro. I'm talking about Joy-Cons, which are built really, really sturdy and meant to last, but are still shaped like Joy-Cons. So you can slip them on the side and it still looks like you're using Joy-Cons, just really good ones with rubberized grips and stuff.
I think you could find a way to make the Pro Controller look form-fitting.
Yeah, but why doesn't a third party do that or Nintendo do that? There's more money.
Who knows?
I'm going to look up Elite Joy-Con controller. There has to be. No. Just a regular Joy-Con being sold by Nintendo for $70.
Yeah.
Oh, no, wait. There's a Hori. Oh, there's a Hori Grip Controller. Oh, wow. You should see the Hori Grip Controller. It basically is like splitting an Xbox 360 controller in half and putting them on either side. But so that it fits the entire thing. So basically now your Switch looks like a steering wheel. I'll have to give you the link.
See, that's what I was talking about. Why didn't somebody come up with this before, where you could just like take the style of the Pro Controller, split
it's fucking Hori, and you know what Hori's like. Hori lives for this shit.
Yeah. I'm saying Nintendo should have done that.
Well, that's my bet. I wonder how much it costs. Oh, it also comes with a back switch too. There's a turbo button in the back.
Nice.
Oh, wait. And here's the other thing. It's $50.
That's not bad.
Well, the Joy-Cons cost $70. So, yeah, it's actually coming out on September 30th this year. So, it hasn't been... I sent you guys the link. So, it's actually coming out this year. So, those of you who are having problems with the Joy-Cons and don't want to spend $70 on a piece of shit controller...
Yeah, I've seen that one. That's pretty cool. That looks like a nice grip for your Joy-Con.
Yeah.
I mean, here's the thing, Nintendo. If you're gonna make shit, other people are just gonna you know, lap you and release something that they actually want. And here's the thing, Hori. For those of you who don't know Hori, and if you're in gaming, I'm shocked if you don't know Hori. Hori is the originator of making the boutique controllers. They're the ones... Hey, I think they even were the first ones to make the DDR pads, right? The real DDR pads. Or was that... No, that was someone else. Or were they the original?
I don't know who the first manufacturers behind those were.
Because I know that it was a company that was eventually bought by the people who actually went out of business. But, you know, it's really sad that they went out of business, too. Because I've been using their controllers for years and years and years, and so, yeah, we're done. You know what I'm talking about. Not Tiger. Oh, damn, I'm going to kill myself, because they were major people in the realm of controllers. They were the ones who... started doing the third party.
Oh my god, they actually made the original NES external flash pad, like, that you would play track and field with.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember playing that Hori? Thing.
Oh, yes.
You're talking about Hori, right? Yeah.
Yes, that was Hori.
No, I'm saying, but Hori's been around forever. And at least you know one thing. Here's the thing. TJ, you're a fighting game thing. Hori is the go-to for every single, and they make it for the arcade cabinets too.
Yeah, Hori fight sticks are pretty good ones.
And I'm trying to remember the friggin' name of the company that created the that eventually went out of business, and it was really sad that they went out of business. They ran out of business this year. In fact, it was really depressing. And they bought Red Octane, who made the controllers. Let me see, who bought Red Octane? Because I know, here it is. Da-da-da. This is going to be wonderful. No, Activision bought Red Octane, but it was someone else who was commissioned to make the controls. Oh, fuck. Oh, no, they made the Rock Band controllers. I just know where they went out of business, and oh, Mad Catz, right? Mad Catz went out of business, and that was depressing.
Oh, we liked Mad Catz. That was a good one. They had the glowing controllers.
But on the other hand, they did it because they were financially stupid. They wrecked themselves. It was sort of like candy. But yeah, Mad Catz. I got the glowing controllers too from them. Yeah, I remember that. For the Xbox 360. And while they seemed cheap, when you bought a Mad Catz controller, didn't they feel like they were going to fall apart at any second? But what would happen is, 10 years later, you'd go for the Mad Catz controller and it still works perfectly.
Yeah, I remember thinking that those things were, like, especially cheap among cheap controllers. They felt that way. They just felt like cheap plastic.
But then it's like they outlast all your other controllers. It's sort of like an AMC car, you know, that thing's falling apart, but it still runs. And yeah, now that I think about it, I have never had a Mad Catz controller go out on me. Like I said, I have a 15-year-old Xbox 360 Mad Catz controller, and it still works on my PC perfectly. So, yeah, I mean, the death of Mad Catz is depressing, but, you know, I think another company got up and replaced them. Let's see what happened to Mad. You know, that's going to be a gaming history thing. So, yeah, a new company bought them and are using their trademarks, but it's not the same thing. Yeah, Mad Catz, the one we all knew and love, ceased operations on March 30th, 2017. So, yeah. They were the ones who created the Capcom Pro Tour controllers for Street Fighter 4. And they also co-published Rock Band 4 with Harmonix, and I think that's why they went out of business. Because, as we all know, Rock Band 4 flopped hard. And then they went with Cloud Imperium Games, and guess what? This is going to come forward full circle. They were going to create simulation products for Star Citizen. So, yeah. According to Mad Catz, the Rock Band sell-through was lower than originally forecast, resulting in a higher inventory balances as well as lower market. You know, that may be so, but I can't fucking find Rock Band 4 equipment that isn't like $400 now. It's like, you know, it's like rarer than rare to find the Rock Band 4 controllers. I mean, the full controllers, not just the guitar, but I mean, you know, the mic, the drums, and the two guitars. Go on Amazon and look for them. You'll see how much they're selling for now. And I was interested in getting Rock Band 4, but I can't afford the shit that they want for it.
Yeah.
So yeah. Everybody, just pour out a 40 for Mad Catz. Look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. We enjoy feedback, so leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. So drive to us on iTunes, leave some iTunes comments. You can find me at Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Johnny Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shard.
And you know what? Next week, we're going to have a gaming history. Not a gaming flashback, but a gaming history for Mad Catz. Because that is one manufacturer we have to talk about next week.
Sure.
That'll be fun.
Did you use any Mad Catz controllers, Scott?
Yes, for the PlayStation. I said I had bought the glowing ones.
Oh, right, the glow-in-the-dark one.
Yeah.
How about you, TJ?
Yeah, I've used a couple of them, like, through different generations.
Yeah, but, like, you needed a controller really quickly, and they were selling for $20, and he said, yeah, I'll get that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just gonna get this until I get another controller, and then you find out, hey, wait a minute, this controller is lasting.
Nah, I always switched off of those things immediately. They just feel wrong.
Yeah, but they also lasted, you know. When you had a third player, and I only have two controllers, let's just get out the old Mad Catz. You can hold that one.
Sure, but I feel ugly holding it.
You feel dirty. Ew, I'm holding a Mad Catz controller. But you didn't get the glow in the dark one and play it in a dark room like me and Scott did. They also had the ones that were naked. You know, the ones that are all glass. You can see the
I like those, and they have and it would light up inside.
Yeah, I had a couple of those.
You know, it wasn't here's the thing. It wasn't a new console until Mad Catz released their version of the game pads for them. It's true. It didn't feel like a console had arrived until you saw the Mad Catz versions of their controllers. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.
Until you saw the Mad Catz versions of their controllers. Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun, be cool, play games, y'all.